Hello, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. First off, as always, thank you so much for listening and downloading. Love doing this, love being part of this community. I'm your host, Neil Horowitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and get more information on the podcast as well as other great content and previous episodes at dsmsports.net. Got a really good show for you today. Really enjoyed this interview. There's just so many good nuggets, so many good stories and anecdotes to learn from. We're going to be talking to Julian Valentin, the Assistant Director for Digital Media and Publications for the Colorado Rockies in Major League Baseball. But before we get to our conversation with Julian, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool isn't so much a tool as it is a hack, or at least a couple of hacks that I really like for Snapchat. First is how to apply multiple filters to the same snap. Not the most intuitive thing, but actually really easy to do and really useful if you want to have multiple filters, if you want to have the time and the temperature, if you want to have the temperature and a special filter. It's a really useful thing that you can do. And all you have to do is just first take your snap, apply your first filter, and when you have that first filter that you're happy with, hold your thumb down on the screen and use your other hand to apply your next filter. You can then also take hold your thumb on the screen again, take your other hand off, and apply a third filter if you want to. You can really mold your snap the way you want it, dress it up as much as possible, get crazy, but don't get too crazy, and impress your users that you know what you're doing on Snapchat. The other cool hack that I like is being able to add multiple lines of text. This is one that's been around for a bit, so you may already know about it, but the easiest thing to do, especially if you're on iOS, open up your notepad, press enter a few times and skip a few lines, and then paste, copy all that blank space, all those blank lines, go to your snap, click on the text button, and then paste all those blank lines, and all of a sudden now you have extra space to work with, and you can write text to your heart's desire. Of course, be mindful that it is Snapchat, so you're not supposed to write a book, you're not supposed to write a ton of text, but it's a way to just fill in a little extra text if you want to make sure to get the snap just the way you want it. So play around with that. Lots more hacks to Snapchat that you can learn about. Just so many tools that are kind of hidden in the platform that, you know, the only people that really know are the so-called native users and those like you and me who are doing the research day to day to sort of figure out what they're missing. So go for it. Give it a shot with these two hacks today. Write some multiple lines of text and then apply multiple filters and impress your users with some cool looking snaps. All right, that's this episode's helpful tool or helpful hacks today for Snapchat. Hope you're enjoying that platform and getting some use out of it. Definitely an evolving space to watch. But we're going to talk about Snapchat as well as a lot of other good things and a lot of good lessons about all things digital and social as we are joined by Julian Valentin, Assistant Director for Publications and New Media, Digital Media for the Colorado Rockies, coming up for you right now. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, and now we are really psyched to be joined by someone who works really hard in Major League Baseball, one of the hardest jobs you're going to find in social and digital media. We are joined by Julian Valentin, the Assistant Director for Digital Media and Publications for the Colorado Rockies. Welcome to the podcast, Julian.
What's up, Neil? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, really looking forward to picking your brain a little bit, learning about your career path and what you do for the Rockies all the time, because it's definitely impressive over the course of 160-plus games this season.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the challenges of working in baseball, but it's something I really enjoy. I like the challenge of trying to tell the same story in a different way over the course of 162 games and multiply that by now 5.5 years. It's a lot of fun trying to piece it all together and make it interesting for our fans.
Well, we're going to try to pick your brain to see how you make it happen a little bit. But before we get to the
good luck with that
discussion, tell us about your career path. Not necessarily the traditional career path to get where you are today, but definitely an interesting story, and I'd love to hear about it, and also any tips or lessons along the way.
Sure. Yeah. So I am I guess I would still be considered a soccer guy, working in Major League Baseball and have been since 2011. Was a youth player coming up, played for the youth national teams in the U.S. system. Played in college, had the opportunity to play professionally for a few years, and one off season, I had just gotten married, and my wife was kind of hounding me a little bit because I was home kind of doing nothing in the off season, because that's what you do in the off season. And she kind of asking me what I was doing, and I said, not really that much. And she said, why don't you just look for jobs or something? So to make her happy, I did. And I'm glad that I did, because I saw the opportunity with the Rockies one day ever and put together a resume that I didn't even really have and some writing samples, sent it in, and the rest is history. I've been here 5.5 years, almost to the day. So it's been quite a ride for sure.
What was that role that you first started with the Rockies? And I mean, at the time, did you even have any baseball or digital experience?
Well, I was always a baseball fan. I grew up in the Philadelphia area, so grew up a Phillies fan. Digital media at that time, back in 2011, was just kind of coming into its own, and I think brands and teams at that point were starting to recognize the importance of it and think long term about what it might become. And my job initially actually was more based in publications and writing, almost like a club journalist. And I still have a fair amount of that in my job description today, working on our publication side. But the digital media has evolved over the years, obviously, and become what takes up the most time and what I'm most passionate about. So I never want to lose the writing and the journalism side of things, because I really enjoy that. And it's sort of what my first love was. But the digital is something I'm really passionate about.
Well, let me ask you, sir, when you were playing professionally, how aware were you and I guess even the players in general of all the coverage going on about the team and what someone in your role with the Rockies was doing for the team that you were playing for?
That's a great question. Back at that time, like I said, it was still sort of evolving. Twitter started in, 2009? So it wasn't until a year or a year and a half after that when people started to realize that there were real-life applications other than just communicating with friends. So at that time, I wasn't incredibly in tune with it, but but with that said, I'd always been interested in blogging and journalism and writing, and I was an English major in college at Wake Forest, so that was a big part of who I was and who I still am, honestly. Just the written word is something that I've always been drawn to. So yeah, digital just kind of fit with that. It was sort of a great mix of the things that I enjoyed and that I think I'm pretty good at. So it was just a perfect fit. And you know, but to your question, as a player, you're not really in tune with that, at least at that time. I think it's a little bit different now, 5 years or 6 years into my job.
Right.
But part of what a good social media manager does is has good relationships with their players and can kind of show them the importance of it and how you can help them out with their brand and be advocates and spokesmen for your club.
Do you think being comfortable around a clubhouse, around professional club, kind of helped you get the job as well as get going with it initially and being comfortable around those players and being able to tell a story with them?
Sure. I think that was certainly a part of the hiring process, at least the thought process when I was going through it. Funny story though, is I had never really been around baseball, and I certainly have friends who were baseball players in college and whatnot, but I'd never really been in a professional baseball environment. So I remember going to spring training in Arizona the very first time. And my boss was like, all right, the clubhouse is open now. Just go in there and do what you need to do. And I was a little bit shell-shocked because the access is so different from soccer to baseball. In baseball, writers are able to essentially have free rein in the clubhouse for hours at a time. And they just have conversations and they get the content that they need and they talk to players and do interviews. Whereas soccer and many other sports, football especially, it's a lot more strict in terms of media access and media time. Mm-hmm. So there was definitely a learning curve. And for those people who know me, I've never been one to sort of talk about myself or my background. So it really wasn't until the last 2 years, really, when players started learning kind of what I did before. So it's not like I showed up and tried to pretend like I was on their level or was talking about who I used to be or what I used to do. I think it's just kind of come in time with the relationships that I've built. And, you know, now a lot of the players that I work with are sort of my peers in terms of age. And, you know, some of them are friends and we get really good work done because of that relationship.
That's awesome. Well, when you started off, it sounded like you said you were doing more straight writing and coverage and publication related things. But where were the Rockies at that point with understanding that this content that you were producing, that media people were producing, was really valuable and it was driving traffic and engagement and keeping the Rockies top of mind? Is that a slow evolving process, or was it already pretty strong when you started?
It was a process, and it took us years to kind of change the mentality of and I bet everybody who's listening to this had the same struggle or still has these issues as they try to sell what they do to their organizational leadership. But first question we were always asked is, how many followers, you know, how much growth in terms of numbers have we had? What numbers are we at? Where do we rank in the league in terms of followers? So that was always what we were asked in probably the first 2 years. And gradually, slowly, we were able to change the culture and the view of what we were doing and really be able to explain why it's important in a larger sense, in terms of building a community, in terms of building brand awareness. And for a club like us, who's we're the only club in our time zone here in Major League Baseball, really trying to get our name out there on a national level and let people know who the Rockies are and what we're all about. So it was definitely a gradual process, but now we're at an incredibly positive point with our ownership and COO, and all of our club leadership understands what we do, why it's important, and we're really set up to succeed. And I can't thank our organization enough for the way that they've supported me and supported our department over the years.
That's great to hear. Was it a pretty parallel evolution process, or did really the marketing side have the light bulb moment, and then he had to sort of convince the baseball ops that, yes, it's okay for us to write about X, Y, and Z and a young player coming up or a veteran struggling to stay around?
Another good question. You're coming with it tonight. So when I started, my department was actually under ticketing. So when I came up in the first 3 years of my job, I was sort of drilled in, we're here to sell tickets. We're here to sell tickets, show pictures of our stadium full and ticket links. But the last 2 years, our department actually moved to communications. So now marketing is no longer under ticketing in our organization. Now it's marketing and communications. Mm-hmm. So there's been a little bit of a shift in terms of sort of who my overall boss is and the overall goals and what we're trying to accomplish. But with that said, at the end of the day, the goal with all these tools and social and digital is ROI. You might not be able to quantify it as easily as you'd like, but we're trying to sell our brand, we're trying to sell merchandise, and we're trying to sell tickets, whether we do so explicitly or not. So that's an inherent part of who we are and what we do. But there's definitely been more of a shift toward the communications and the baseball operations side, as opposed to kind of when we started out 2 or 3 years ago.
And I think you definitely hit on it there, where it does touch all those parts of an organization with merchandise, with ticket sales, with marketing in general, with community relations,
absolutely,
with everything under the sun, and awareness as well. Where did social media start to come into the picture? When you went from being the publications guy to the reporter to someone that also all of a sudden was balancing these powerful tools?
Sure. Yeah, just to clarify, so the job, even when I was hired in 2011, it still had the digital component to it. So I've essentially always been the catalyst for the publications and the digital, but digital just kind of emerged in the last few years, just to clarify that. Okay. But yeah, I would definitely say over the years, especially these last 2 years, there's been a great amount of interest internally for the opportunity to use these tools for every organization. And I know in the SM sports industry, there's some debate as to, you know, how much saying no and being inclusive to your organization and being able to cover everything. And I'm of the belief that these are our tools for our organization, and I very seldom say no. I think the mark of a true pro in this industry is being able to say yes and make it work in a way that fits your brand, fits what you're trying to do on a daily basis, and makes it a positive and engaging experience for your fans. So I take a lot of pride in saying yes to most requests, actually. And we actually just started a work order system. So rather than getting just random email and text messages, we have a formal sheet that internally people have to kind of submit to us, and then we schedule it out and fit it into our content in a way that makes sense for us. So being able to think ahead and put the onus on people that if they do want coverage, that they have to do a little bit of work themselves and give us the information in the way that we're requesting it. We found that that's been incredibly valuable for us in terms of making sure that we're able to cover everybody and maximize our larger goals at the same time.
I love that. You hit on so many good things there. I think, first off, if the organization is working hard to do something and communicate something, then it's probably worth using social media to push it. If not, then the organization may be doing something wrong.
Exactly.
But I did want to go into that, the work order system. I think that's a great way to help make sure communication is happening. Has it been a sort of you helping to teach other departments to some degree of what that should look like, so you don't get a sponsorship salesman saying we owe X brand 7 posts for the month. As a little more evolved, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, just to explain, go in depth with it. It's literally a form, a Word document, and all the people that I work with around the department, they're asked to essentially write out their request specifically, send pictures, anything that they are requesting to get included, and we basically work it into our content calendar when it makes sense. And my greatest request, and I've expressed this internally to the people that we work with, allow me and my team to craft the message to the best way that we know it will be received by our fans. So rather than saying it needs to be said in this exact way, give us the bullet points and allow us to craft the message in a way that our fans will receive it positively. So, over the years, the expectation is there, the trust is there, and they know that if they essentially allow us to do our jobs in the way that we've been doing them for the last 5+ years, that it's going to be a positive for them. So we're a few months into this. It's not perfect. We're still learning as we go, but it's been a positive thing so far, no doubt.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about, I think we hear a lot about content calendars and social media strategy in general, and obviously sports is such a unique ecosystem because you can have a content calendar, then it can all of a sudden get to some degree torn to pieces because the team goes on a huge winning streak, or Trevor Story hits 8 home runs in 3 games or something.
Yep.
How do you sort of balance the real-time content, the day-to-day, with the stuff that is sort of built in that has to get done?
Yeah, the stuff you're mentioning, the stuff that you do on the fly, the moments that you identify, that's really what makes, that's what separates the best and the people who are still trying to catch up a little bit, I think. Being able to identify content is at a premium, and if your organization has a social media manager who's able to identify content and deliver it in a way that's interesting, that's a recipe for really great things. So all the clubs that everybody references as being the top ones, that's what I think separates them is the ability to identify those moments, and then once they do identify them, deliver it in a way that that's going to maximize the way it's consumed. So I think that's incredibly important, and for me that's the most important part, is being able to be able to think on the fly and identify those key times, and then we supplement and sprinkle in the kind of the mandatory stuff where it makes sense, but always trying to make sure we're not doing multiple sales posts in a row, multiple quote unquote boring things in a row, just trying to mix it up to keep everybody engaged. And I always tell people that our overall strategy in social and digital is just be interesting. There are so many great teams out there, so many great organizations and brands who do such a great job on social, that at times it kind of blends together. So what can we do? What can anybody do to separate themselves as somebody is thumbing through their Twitter feed or their Instagram feed? What can you put out there to make them hesitate and stop and look at your content and engage with it? And the word engagement's a whole other argument, a whole nother beast that kind of annoys me, but that's neither here nor there at this point.
But I think that's definitely all part of the real-time element too, is that because you're so in tune with what the rest of the organization is trying to do day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, that you can understand those objectives. And so if there is a great real-time moment that you can seize upon it and tie it to other objectives. I mean, if you have a great highlight or a great fan moment, that is also in turn, marketing for the team and marketing the next game. And you can definitely tie those things together, I feel like.
No doubt. And to spin that point forward as well, one thing that we're really smart and subtle about is getting our sponsor signage into pictures that we carefully select. Mm. So we've gotten calls from our corporate sales department, our corporate partnerships group, who's really thankful for us choosing specific pictures that have the Hartford in the background or Jimmy John's. And we think about those things, and we are very aware of keeping our clients happy and being able to give added value when it makes sense in a very subtle way. And fans who are following us, they see a picture of a diving catch, but they don't realize that the picture was actually selected by my team because of the Jimmy John's ad. So we're very subtle in the way that we do that. And that's, as you said, added value for our organization and our partners.
What a cool insight. I love that. And it's really interesting to see that space evolve too. So you're not just seeing the sponsor value of that sign being in a Rockies photo that you guys share, but even if a fan posts a selfie and there's a sponsor billboard in the background and that gets shared all about, it's really cool to see that space evolve to try to solve those mysteries, I guess, of what that true reach is.
Yeah. Yeah, once you figure it out, let me know, because we're still trying to work through it all.
So it sounds like, you know, you definitely are very much on the pulse of what everything the organization is trying to do, which is really a hat tip to you and what you've been able to establish there. It seems pretty understood now, the power of what you hold and being a steward of the brand. So if someone does come to you and say, this is what I want to do, and that they know that you will convey it in the voice that the Rockies seek to put out there?
No doubt. That's an incredibly important part of my job and every social media manager's job, is you are essentially the keeper of your brand. You can have your owner or your manager or your coach or your best players do and say whatever they want in a media press conference, and they can have all the best quotes in the world. But if you make one mistake on social or do or say something that's not true to your brand and who you want to be, it's incredibly detrimental to all those people I just mentioned and what they're trying to do. So access, I think, is incredibly important to make sure that you know exactly the messages that are coming from the clubhouse, the messages that are coming from, you know, in our case, the baseball operations department, from executive leadership. That's something I take very, very seriously and have ever since. And again, credit to everybody at my organization who's entrusted me with the power, as you said, and the ability to control that brand. It's something that I take very seriously and take a lot of pride in.
How does it actually play out in real life, I guess? I mean, are you just getting sort of having conversations with the director of PR and saying, this is the personality that we want to cultivate? Are you reflecting what Walt Weiss is doing in the clubhouse? And you're getting all these different directions, I guess. And at the end of the day, you're push and send on those tweets, those Facebook posts. So how does it actually play out in real life?
I'll give you an example. And this is also, there's a lot of stuff to go through in this example. So one of the other things I'm incredibly proud of that we've been able to do with the Rockies is we have a content person, social, digital, or a team photographer who travels, who's with the team on every road trip. So that's something that I think that a lot of clubs are still building toward, but we've been able to get that set up. So on every away trip, we have at least one PR communications rep and at least one content person from the club. So we were on the San Diego trip a couple weeks ago, San Diego and Los Angeles, and our best player, who's literally the best player in baseball, Nolan Arenado, great kid, amazing person, amazing player. He was really frustrated. We had been through a tough stretch, and he had a little outburst in the dugout. And it was early in the game, the first inning, and the entire rest of the game, everybody in the press box was speculating about what happened, what was said, what was he mad about. It was a pretty animated moment for a guy who's an emotional player. As I said, he's a winner, and he's a great kid. So I was sitting next to our director of communications, who's the best, and we were thinking about, you know, what's the media going to say? What's the message going to be here? But my specialty, though, is thinking in terms of what our community would think, what our fans are going to think, how are they going to perceive this? What's the perception going to be of the incident? So after the game, the first thing I wanted to do was get exactly what happened. Warren, our communications director, he's working with media to get their messaging correct and everything with the post-game stuff from the manager and talking to all the players. So he's doing his PR thing. And the whole time I'm looking at Twitter, I'm trying to see what the community's thinking and what they're saying. So I realized that the best way to do it was to get out in front. So I got quotes from the manager, the catcher who was involved in the play, and then Arenado as well, and put together a little graphic so that rather than allowing people to go to all the media sources and read their stories and the way they were going to spin it, because we don't know what media is going to do ultimately, I knew that was a moment where we could use our own tools to drive the message and turn it into a positive thing about a guy who just wants to win. He wasn't singling out anybody specifically. So that's a long way of saying we have a great working relationship with our communications department. I think in terms of fan engagement, fan community ties, what we're trying to do in terms of building brand awareness. And I take a great amount of pride in protecting our players and making sure that they're perceived in a positive way. So as our PR department was dealing with media and working on that, I was simultaneously working on how we were going to get in front of the message and put our own spin on it in our own words, rather than being responsive to how the media and how fans were going to perceive it. So we wanted to drive that conversation it blew over in less than 24 hours. So that's a really long, horrible answer of relationship with our PR department.
I am shaking my head here in amazement. That is just what a great microcosm of the power of social media to really take control of the message and frame the story the proper way and understand what the fans are going to – if you don't put something out there, the fans will find something else coming from other rumor mills. And thanks for telling that story. That's great.
And strategically, I made a graphic so that it was right there in front of them. Because if you tell people to click on a link and read a story, nobody does it. So it had to be an image with all the quotes right in front of people so they would actually read it. It wasn't about clickbait at that time. It was about protecting your brand and players and getting it out there in the way that it would be consumed as quickly and efficiently as possible.
Oh, so. I love it. Having a great conversation with someone who really knows what he's doing in the space, Julian Valentin, the Assistant Director for Publications and Digital Media for the Colorado Rockies. We talked about being the steward of the brand, but tell me, who are the Rockies, and what do you guys try to do to stand out in the market, drive awareness, and how you guys really market yourselves in the marketplace?
It's a great question. At the end of the day, we're about being a fan-friendly and a family-friendly atmosphere and organization. That's definitely reflected in our digital strategy. We try to be fun. We try to be a voice that everybody wants to talk about at the dinner table, and we try to be on the field and at the ballpark, a place that everybody wants to bring their family to. So it's definitely reflected in that way. We're a classy organization, I like to think, and we have great players who are really good spokesmen and great leaders in our community. And it's a great place to work. It's a really special place, and I'm really glad to be a part of our organization.
And with the Rockies overall, I mean, you guys have had up and down years. I mean, I can, as a Padres fan suffering, I have bad memories of Matt Holliday still waiting for him to touch home plate. I won't go there right now. You guys, like my Padres, have struggled in recent years as far as on-field performance. How does that affect the way you do market the team? I mean, still family-friendly entertainment, but do you guys tend to try to drive connections with the players more so the outcome doesn't matter as much? Sure. Or I guess tell me how that really plays into the overall messaging.
That's a big part of it. We, like I said, we have a great group of guys. They're really popular with great personalities. So marketing individual players is certainly a part of it. And to your point, since I've been here in 2011, we have not performed particularly well. This year has been a really positive year for us, and I think we're really going to make some noise in the next few seasons. So we've turned a corner for sure. The last 5 years have been tough. But one thing I've learned over the years is you definitely can't take things personally. And you just kind of have to have thick skin, and definitely took a little while to get to that point. But along with that, the other thing I've learned is that the worst thing you could ever have in sports and digital and sports business, whatever, is apathy. I've been through those times where anything we put out was just, is anybody seeing this? Does anybody care? And there's nothing worse than that if you're trying to build a community and build a brand and move things forward. So that's really scary when you get to that point. To combat that, I mean, there are honestly times where I'll very specifically choose language that I know will sort of make our fans a little bit unhappy, just to get a rise out of them, just to make sure that they're still connected to the club. Trolling our fans would probably not be the way I would phrase that, but nothing we ever put out is by chance. Every image, every word is very well thought out. That's not to say it's perfect, but we definitely spend a whole lot of time thinking about every little act that we do and how that's gonna play. And sometimes you have to be happy and put forth the positive message, even when fans aren't really in a positive mood. Our job is to keep things positive and keep things moving forward. So, the other thing is I'm not really anymore at this point in my career bullied by those bad moments. So I've learned how to find positives in every single loss, every single situation. There's always something positive to find. That's my mentality about life. That's just how I view the world. I'm just a positive person. And, you know, to what I was saying earlier, sometimes our fans don't like it. Sometimes they want to be unhappy and they want to yell at us. But if they got to know me and who I am, they would know that the voice behind the account is somebody who literally is as optimistic and positive as the account sounds. And I think that's important, especially because you're representing, as I said, your entire organization, your players, your coaches and your managers. And the last thing we should ever do in social media or sports digital is troll your own team, your organization. So we always stick up for ourselves and our players, and we just keep moving things forward, because if I like content and the people who I work with think that it's good content, most fans will think that as well.
Totally. You gotta believe in what you're putting out there first. And let me just commend you. I love the statement of, you know, being afraid of silence and apathy. I always like to tell people I'd rather have a fan base that is, I mean, to put it bluntly, cussing us out on social media.
Absolutely.
As opposed to complete silence. Then that no one cares. There's no passion there.
I've been to both. We go on a 5-game winning streak, fans are lining up to buy World Series tickets. We go on a 5-game losing streak, everybody should be fired and move the team to Nashville. You know, if we lose 12 games and it's dead silence, that is what scares me. And I've seen all three, and I try to avoid that last one as much as possible.
Even if you guys do, whatever, say lose a game 8-2 or whatever, there still may be a great Nolan Arenado diving stop or a home run from Carlos Gonzalez. Is that sort of part of the picture as well, is that you can still promote these individual stars and these great plays that happen game to game?
No doubt. Like I said, there's always something positive to find. In the worst loss, there's always something positive to find if you want to. You need to have the motivation and the desire to find positive sometimes, but they're always there if you're looking for them.
What's it like in the clubhouse if the team is performing well versus when they're performing poorly? Does that affect the kind of content and the kind of interviews that you can do with players if someone's in a slump or if the team's in a slump versus, you know, hitting a hot streak?
Yeah, it does. There's nothing better than a winning Major League Baseball clubhouse, and there's nothing worse than a losing baseball clubhouse. But the reality of it is, baseball is the hardest sport to be a fan of, because you can be a fan of the best team in the history of Major League Baseball, and they're still going to lose 60 times in a year. You're still going to lose 60 times, and you're going to have to go into the clubhouse, and everybody's going to be happy 60 times in a season. And that's if you're the best team in the history of the game. So part of baseball is learning how to shake it off, shower up, and get back the next day like it never happened, win or loss. And that's reflected in our digital strategy too. I mean, there have been times where we've had a terrible loss the night before where, you know, it's a blown save or whatever. And the very first thing I do is I go to the stadium and I get there at sunrise and I take a picture of the sun coming up to subtly say, hey guys, the sun came up today. It's a new day. We get to play again tomorrow. So those are the little things that we do as well. Just reminding fans that if you're a baseball fan and you're really truly invested in the club, there's going to be really good times and there's going to be really bad times, but we're in this together, and the season is a grind like no other. So, but to your question, yeah, at times it does dictate our content. If we're on a 5-game losing streak, I'm not going to do one of our live Facebook Live, Rock Talk Live chats with somebody. It just doesn't make sense. It's not going to be well received. But generally speaking, there's few situations really that are sort of subject to the way we're playing, but it does happen from time to time.
Okay. And I guess just to transition briefly, just a few more minutes left with Julian Valentin, Assistant Director for Publication Digital Media for the Colorado Rockies, having a really good discussion about all things Rockies, social, baseball, and everything under the sun.
Life in general.
Your guys' philosophy with trying to balance all the platforms out there. I mean, we look at, you know, when you first started, it was Facebook, it was Twitter, and Instagram came along, and Google Plus is still kind of out there, and then Snapchat, and all these different platforms. How do you decide where to put resources and where to make sure you're putting content?
We're still trying to decide. We're still trying to figure that out. It's funny because this offseason, we sat down and we went through each platform and came up with a strategy of how we wanted to approach each one. And it was really well thought out, I thought. And I was like, okay, this is something we can actually execute on a day-to-day basis. And then the season starts and it's blown to bits. So you can, I think a lot of times you can plan all that you want and you can have all these great ideas, but following through, especially in sports, is such, is so fast paced and so quick moving. It's really hard to follow through with that at times. So what we've really done this season, once spring training started, is just zeroed in on what everybody nowadays would consider the big four, although I know there's people who hate Snapchat out there. Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. That's what we really key in on. And of course, each of those has a specific strategy, a specific voice, and I'm very against regurgitating content across the board. So even if it's a birthday message, we'll pick three different images and use three different photos across the platforms if it's the same copy. So just trying to mix it up as much as possible, understanding that most of our fans probably follow us on all platforms. I was just going to say, Snapchat is one that we haven't quite figured out. The point we're at right now with Snapchat is if I don't have anything compelling that is worthy of multiple snaps in a row, I'm not going to just do one snap just for the sake of doing it. So we're trying to, with Snapchat, just trying to identify as many story-worthy situations and stories around our club as possible. So if it's a photo shoot, for example, that's worthy of a story. If we're at a visiting ballpark, we could take fans on a tour of that. But using Snapchat as an afterthought and just saying, oh, I haven't done anything on Snapchat today, I'm just going to do another batting practice picture or two, that's not what we're doing these days. We're just trying to add real value and create real stories instead of just throwing stuff up there just because we feel like we have to.
And especially now, I think, in the overcrowded place that Snapchat's becoming to some degree, that it's okay to not have a story every day, because
exactly,
check your profile and it shows the last story was 2 weeks ago. It's not that kind of stale environment that Facebook may become if you don't post for 2 weeks.
That's
and
a
also,
lot.
Of
yeah.
course, you want people to know when they tap on your Snapchat story that they're going to get something worthwhile, and it's worth for them to choose to view that story over their friends or other brands, for example.
Yep, you said that much better than I did. That's exactly what our thought is. Yeah,
did the MLB
quality,
Advanced
it's quality
Media
over quantity.
Partnership with Snapchat affect that at all? Do they reach out to clubs and help you guys with best practices and say, hey, you know, we're signing this big deal. We expect you guys to hold up your end of the bargain as the individual clubs.
No, I mean, Major League Baseball provides a great amount of support for us. They have some really good resources at the league headquarters in New York, including relationships with companies like Snapchat and Facebook. And over the years, I've kind of met some of those people myself. And if we have specific questions for the people at each platform and each company, we'll certainly do that, whether it's Twitter or whoever. But yeah, we have a great amount of support for Major League Baseball. All clubs do. And, it's a nice thing to have, so we're not sort of trying to figure things out solely by ourselves.
As far as the content that they help with, whether it's a highlight or a real-time GIF or any sort of coverage overall, are they throwing that stuff your way? Are they posting on your behalf? Are you submitting requests? And
wait,
how
what
does you play out?
What's a GIF? What's that?
I'm Team GIF all the way.
Oh,
you're
you
not
are?
Gonna change me.
Oh, okay. All right. Never mind. I mean, baseball, MLB Advanced Media, they're a great resource for us and all clubs. We've always been incredibly independent, and frankly, MLB doesn't do much for us aside from in-game GIFs. If there's a big play, they have all the stuff in New York. They can cut it and get it out to us momentarily. So that's a nice resource to have. So we don't have to invest internally for those types of resources to be able to make that happen. So that's great. But they offer anything from Twitter game coverage to live highlights to actually posting on platforms if clubs need that support. So it's a great support system. But like I said early on, we have such great internal buy-in and my team, I can't speak enough for the people that we have working at the Rockies. So we've always been really independent. We like controlling our own voice, our own message, and we like, just kind of running the show by ourselves. So MLB is a resource for whoever wants it and whoever wants to use what they offer. But we are quite independent in what we do.
And I think you're obviously focused day to day on the Rockies, on the Rockies fan community. And I think baseball lends itself to more of a regional focus where we want to win our fans first, as opposed to, you know, serving the league master, I guess. And we, you know, we're speaking shortly after the NBA finals just ended, a great season. I've seen a billion headlines about how the NBA is the darling of everyone. They're winning social, they're winning digital. And what if anything, do you see or think about that Major League Baseball or its individual clubs can or should or are doing to help get ahead too, to help, you know, get other people to say that MLB is doing it right?
I think that's a great point. Overall, I think in the last couple of years, there's just been an influx of just really good, smart social and digital professionals joining clubs on a full-time basis. As clubs are sort of taking that next step in investing in these tools and really investing in digital, I think you're seeing just better people in general, better people who understand what this is all about, understand the voice and how most fans want to consume their information on social. So I think starting first and foremost, I think there's just been an influx of good young people. And then for people like myself, all the old grandpas in Major League Baseball, whether it's, you know, Brian Srabian from the Giants, you know, not to call Brian old, he's one of my favorite people. But the guys who have been around a lot longer, guys and girls who have been around longer, whether it's, you know, Lisa from the Reds or Caitlin from the Brewers. I mean, there's only a handful of us nowadays who have really been around for more than 3 or 4 seasons. So, having sort of some new blood in the game in baseball to keep things fresh and push the envelope and keep us on our toes and make sure that we're not coasting, I think has been a really positive thing. And I'm looking forward to seeing how other industries continue to evolve too. It's nowadays kids graduate from college wanting to do social and digital, and they've done internships their whole life trying to get that opportunity. And that wasn't how it was 5 years ago. I'm sure if you talk to Brian or anybody like that, they would tell you that it just kind of evolved and they were doing marketing and it just sort of turned into that. You know, I think I'm 29, kids these days, they're graduating and this is what they want to do and they're really passionate about it. And I think that's great for baseball, but for all sports and our industry in general. Passion is one of the most powerful things in life, and it's great to see that.
And I think you definitely hit on it there, is that, you know, because all this talent is joining the social media and sports space in general, it's not like one league is winning over the other, or, you know, one is more innovative than the other. It seems like all boats are raising, and every year you're seeing more tweets around the World Series, more Facebook fans for Major League Baseball, for the Super Bowl, NBA Finals, and so it certainly is just an evolution in the SM sports community overall, I guess.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's so many smart people who have worked in this industry, in this community for a long time, and there are more really smart and driven and educated people who are continuing to come. So it's good for everybody. It's good for all sports, no doubt.
And lastly, before we get to this episode's shareable stat, Julian, we started off talking about the grind of 162 plus game season when you take into account preseason and impossible playoffs as well. What sort of do your guys' philosophy change day to day, week to week? If it's a day game on a Wednesday versus a Saturday night game in prime time, versus a home game or an away game, are you adjusting the content scheme around that different fan experience, or is it try to be as consistent as possible regardless of time, day, etc.?
Yeah, I think in terms of timing, I think we're pretty consistent. There are certainly some things that we do daily that we like to make sure that is right. We do a lineup as early as possible, or else the daily fantasy sports community will start blowing up our mentions, which is one of my biggest annoyances in life.
That's another topic for another day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we hear it from them if our lineup is not out to a time that is suitable for their lineup. But yeah, so we get our lineup as soon as possible. We always do some kind of beginning of the game tweet. And then, like I said, it's just kind of a feel thing. You never know what's going to happen. And you just sort of watch how the game unfolds and adjust to that. So there are certainly things that we do each and every day. And we also produce a recap graphic as well with the score and all that stuff. So those are things that we do daily. But like I said, like we talked about earlier, the best stuff is what you think of on the fly. It's having the creativity to present the same exact thing in a different way.
Can you tell if more fans are following the game on Twitter on their phone versus in front of their TV watching on a night game on a weekend versus a weekday in the middle of the day?
Yeah, there's certainly times that when we know there's going to be a little bit more conversation or it's going to be a little bit slower. There are times where we have games that aren't televised, and those are games where we strategically tweet a little bit more because fans can't follow on TV, so we need to make sure the game updates are there. But honestly, game updates are the most boring things. We just try to provide as much color commentary as possible rather than play by play. I mean, honestly, I can't tell you how many teams I've unfollowed because of their play by play is terrible. So it's all about color commentary, providing things to our fans and all fans that they can't get anywhere else, whether it's a specific voice or inside access or images that only we can provide. So play-by-play is no good. that's sort of another little tangent, but yeah, there are times when we know it's going to be sort of a slower, whether it's like a Saturday afternoon or yes. Sunday, but yeah, for the most part, it's pretty consistent though.
Hey, well, that answer is hit on so many things that we've talked about. It's a great transition. We'll get in this episode's shareable stat in just a moment, and we'll be right back to have our 9-pitch inning with Julian. So coming up, our episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back.
Well, I told you it'd be good, and it was fantastic. Just such a good conversation with Julian Valentin. So many good insights, so much good wisdom and experience and knowledge from him. I guarantee you learned something if you listen to that conversation. But we'll have a little fun with Julian coming up in our 9-pitch inning. But before we get to that, we have this episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat comes from the recently completed NBA Finals. After the Game 7 win, the Cleveland Cavaliers shared a Facebook Live video, a pretty short video of the celebration going on in the locker room, so obviously great access first off the bat. And that video, after being up for just around a day and a half, accumulated over 5 million views. And talk about the reach for that too, it just must be astounding. But 5 million views, over 5 million, to put that into context, that's about the same number of people that watched the clinching game of the Stanley Cup Finals that was won by the Pittsburgh Penguins earlier this spring. 5+ million views. Now, you can shake your head at that. Obviously, Facebook views are taken with a grain of salt, but as are Nielsen viewers for television. But what can you do about it? The lesson to learn is not, well, go and win a championship and get access to a celebratory locker room. That's pretty common sense, but also easier said than done. The fact is, take advantage of every opportunity you have. If you are seeing something that you know is cool, or even that you have to remind yourself is cool because you're not in the shoes of a quote-unquote normal fan, post it, share it. Everything is a big focus on live now, and we have more tools than ever to get the content to fans in the live arena. And then especially on Facebook, it is there for consumption from there on out, and it will quickly go viral and get shared multiple times, as this video did. So be mindful of those opportunities. It might be a game of kickball before the game that players are warming up. It might be, you know, guys who are hanging out after practice and, you know, maybe you do a quick little interview with them, or guys who are, you know, boarding the bus to go on a road trip and they're all in their suits and ties and taking their suitcases down. Think about all those moments that you as a fan would love to be a fly on the wall. And go live, as long as you have buy-in, of course, and permission to do so from your superiors and from the team operations. You know, be that fly on the wall for them. Imagine those scenarios. If it helps, you know, write down some good ideas for scenarios that you think would make a good live video. Test it out and see what fans react to the best. And then, of course, at those high moments, those moments that you know everything you post is going to go viral, take advantage of those opportunities and turn on the smartphone. Get someone else on your team to turn on the smartphone. You're better off doing it than not doing it. The fact is, a lot of teams have won championships over the past several years in this new age of digital and social media. Sometimes they'll share a graphic, sometimes they'll share a quick Vine, maybe some live photos, but now we have the ability to take fans there with live video. And the fact is, if the Cavaliers did not post that video, that's over 5 million viewers and even more impressions that they would have just left on the table, not realized, and just potential that they wouldn't turn into real results. So plan as much as you can in advance, and when you find yourself in the moment, that moment that you know fans would give their right arm to be there, take them there. Open up that phone, open up your Facebook Live or your Periscope, or just take some smartphone video that you can share wherever in the future. So that's really the takeaway there. That's this episode's shareable stat, and it's pretty astounding. Again, over 5 million views from a simple, quick locker room video on Facebook. When you compare it to some gargantuan TV numbers, that gets the attention of not just your bosses, but certainly corporate partners as well, when they're looking to who has an engaged fan base that can reach a ton of fans and a ton of casual viewers in a moment. So that's the episode's shareable stat. Pretty astounding. The NBA Finals just had an incredible run when it came to digital and social content. Over the course of the 7-game finals, another stat for you, a little bonus one, they had over 7.4 billion video views across just their website and mobile app. So not even including social media and Vine and all that. So the fact is, if you share it, if it's good, they will come. All right, that's the episode's shareable stat. We're going to have a little fun with Julian Valentin, Assistant Director for Publications and Digital Media for the Colorado Rockies. We're going to have him back for our 9-pitch inning. Stay tuned for that.
All right, that was the episode's shareable stat, and now we are right back with Julian Valentin, the Assistant Director for Publications and Digital Media for the Colorado Rockies. Julian, you nailed your interview, hit a home run, whatever you, baseball analogy you want to use. Are you now ready for your 9-pitch inning?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, number one for you. Your best story from your pro soccer days and the best player you were ever on the pitch with. You want to hear about soccer days.
Okay. Best player I've ever been on the pitch with. That's a tough one. All right, so the best player now would probably be Luis Suarez. He's an incredible player, plays for Barcelona. We played him in the Under-20 World Cup when I was with the U-20 team in Canada. Although, to be honest, he didn't seem that great at that time, but obviously we know the kind of player he is. At the time, the best player I played with was Landon Donovan, who I was fortunate to have him as a teammate. He was just so explosive, so smart. David Beckham wasn't too bad either as a teammate, but the other best player I played with was probably Michael Bradley, who's still doing great things. So I've been very lucky to have some great teammates and friends and people that I've played against. So there's four names for you. Best story. The best one, of course, as an athlete, you can't really tell the best story. there are some good ones that after hours were pretty legendary, but ones I'll share is just winning a national championship in college. And I know that's not a pro moment, but winning a national championship at Wake Forest was an incredible experience. Having a ring from that and kind of getting kicked in the face. If you Google that, that's a whole story in itself. And playing in the Under-20 World Cup. Those are my two pinnacle moments, the things that I'll always tell my grandkids as I look back fondly as when I was a young boy.
Hey, that's pretty amazing. I mean, those players you shared the field with and win the national championship at Wake Forest, go Deeks. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yep. And I have scars to prove it. So
I am gonna have to search on YouTube now. You piqued my curiosity for sure.
Okay.
All right. Number two for you, Julian. The social media MVP of the Rockies clubhouse and why?
MVP from the Rockies. The first guy that comes to mind is Charlie Blackman. He's an all-star outfielder for us, and I'm lucky because my go-to guy for social happens to be an all-star and a fan favorite. So he's always really great. He's on his Twitter and Instagram. It's just he's really funny. He's great personality. Fans love him because he's just like that guy next door who happens to be a Major League Baseball player. So he comes to mind right away. But we also have Carlos Gonzalez is great. He understands social media as it relates to spreading his brand, and he does a lot in community work that he uses social for. So that's huge.
That's great.
And also Jason Mott's another really good one that we have. He started the K Cancer movement in baseball. That's really big. The K Cancer T-shirts, and he does a lot with cancer research. And he's a great humanitarian. And Jason does a great job of using social to interact with fans and kind of reward them if they buy a shirt. He always tweets them back. So those are three guys that come to the top of my mind right away. And they're very different in the way that they use social, but they're all effective in different ways.
That's great. That was perfect. All right, number three for you, Julian. We touched on a lot of challenges, opportunities, and everything in your position with the Rockies. So tell me, though, what is the biggest and most persistent challenge in your job day to day?
Oh, boy. Biggest challenge. I mean, the stock answer, which is honestly the true answer, is just managing schedules. I'm lucky to have two people full time who are dedicated to social, working alongside me, and Lauren Jacaruso works with me on everything. She does an amazing job. So we try to manage our schedule as much as possible. And myself, I have two young boys and young family, and with all the travel and stuff, it's definitely a grind trying to manage all that and make sure that I'm being a good father, being a good husband, but also being a good teammate in my job. So like everybody who works in this industry, I think it's probably the hours and the management of your time. That's definitely a challenge.
Definitely no such thing as a weekend or an off day. And let me quote Kevin Durant: when I hear about you raising those two kids, you're the real MVP, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Number four for you, Julian. I always like these answers. Tell me your favorite digital or social media campaign that you worked on in your time with the Rockies.
Oh boy, goodness, that's a tough one. If I had to pick one, I would probably say when Todd Helton retired back in 2013, I think it was. The years are kind of blending together. That's work I was really incredibly proud of and still am, because I think I go back and forth sometimes as to how important sports are and how important social and digital media really is. And that was the first time I really understood the power of what we do in terms of building a community. Todd had played with the Rockies for his whole entire career, 17 years, and families had grown up together, literally watching him play. And they would talk about him at dinner time, and they would go out to games. And some of our fans' best memories were surrounding our club and Todd Helton. So being able to lead the discussion and lead the conversation surrounding his retirement was incredibly special, and seeing what it meant to our fans in a larger sense, not just retweets and clicks and stuff. Mm-hmm. Being able to see how that man was able to tie our community together and our fans together was really cool. So that's another long rambling answer of saying Todd Helton's retirement campaign in 2013.
No, that's great. I mean, I got goosebumps just hearing that. I think every social media manager at some point has that feeling when, you can feel the emotion just coming through the screen or the mobile device, and that's when you realize that these aren't customers, they truly are fans, and they live and breathe this stuff. That's great.
Yeah, it's so true. And I go back and forth sometimes, because there are times where I'm like, this is sports, people, this doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. And then there are situations where something like the tragedy in Orlando happens, mm-hmm. and to see what the power of sport to bring everybody together, and what Orlando City Soccer Club was able to do, and what it means to that community to have a team to rally around, it really does matter. It really, truly does matter. And we as social media and digital professionals, we're in a lot of ways, we're the ones who drive that conversation and bring people together.
Oh, said so well, man. I love that sentiment. All right, back to some fun now. The number five for you. I want to hear about your best. So, excluding any Rockies, who is the best player in Major League Baseball? And also, because you're a soccer player by trade back in the day, who is the best soccer player in the world currently?
Okay, that's easy. The best Major League Baseball player, and I swear I'm not being a homer here, Nolan Arenado. I mean, this kid is so ridiculously good. And I say this coming from the Rockies, and one of my frustrations is we don't get enough national attention. If Nolan Arenado played for the Yankees or the Red Sox, or frankly any team in any other time zone aside from ours, he would be the biggest star in baseball. So this kid is so special. He's got a great personality, such a good kid. He's the best player in baseball, hands down, no question. Offensive, defensive, best player in baseball. So that's your answer on that. The best current soccer player, that was the other one. Mm-hmm. It has to be Messi. Just the stuff he does off the ball, his movement. He's always a step ahead of everybody. His explosiveness and quickness is second to none. His game is obviously different than what Cristiano does, and they're both mm-hmm. phenomenal players. But if I'm starting a team, Messi's the guy that I want.
Well, I will definitely agree on both parts. Arenado, I think you can pretty much not have to worry about voting for the Gold Glove in the National League for third baseman for like the next 10 years.
Seriously. I mean, he honestly could get a Gold Glove every single year, which would just be crazy.
All right, number six for you, Julian. Back to the put on your thinking cap a little more. Okay. On the professional side. What are the two or three metrics that, every day, every week that you're tracking most closely for the Rockies on a frequent basis?
Metrics. The biggest one for us is probably clicks, to be honest with you, mm-hmm. And image clicks more specifically. We spend a great amount of time selecting images and photos. We have an amazing team photographer, Matt Dirksen, who does a great job and makes all of us look good. Quick side note, in digital and social, we get so much credit that we don't deserve, whether it's production teams who make videos or mean tweets and things like that. There's so much great content coming from other parts of our organization that somehow digital managers get credit for that we don't actually deserve. So that's a way of saying our photographer's awesome and makes me look really good. We spend a lot of time selecting our images and selecting our GIFs, and we take a great amount of pride in creating fun stuff for fans to look at and click on. So if we can get people to click on our pictures and stop what they're doing on their feed and check out what we're doing, that's what I think our overall goal is. So yeah, I think photo clicks is the biggest one.
No, I love that. And yeah, I think you hit on a great point there. It always kind of makes me smile a little bit when I see, like, on Twitter that someone is shouting out the digital media manager for a great video campaign. And yeah, they're certainly part of it, but there's so much teamwork going on in the background to put those kind of things together.
So much. And I'm always I think it's really important that we as social media managers, if you want to say that, make sure that the right people get thanked for the work that they do, whether it's quietly behind closed doors or publicly. Like I said, Lauren and Matt make me look really good. So there's a lot of people who do a lot of hard work for us.
Well, speaking of great teams, number seven for you, besides the Rockies, I know you and I have talked about this a little bit offline. How about the other Major League Baseball team? There's a lot of great ones, but choose just one if you can that does a great job on social media, and why?
Major League Baseball. There's a lot of, like I said, there's so many good teams in all sports. My favorite team in baseball, though, is the Pittsburgh Pirates. Mm-hmm. They do such a great job with their visuals, and something that doesn't go unnoticed to me or the people who work in baseball is we spend a lot of time doing other stuff, and they just always have great visuals that I just frankly don't have the time to invest in doing that. You know, I don't have an hour and a half to waste or spend creating a graphic just for one post. They have an amazing look and feel. They're consistent. Their brand is really, it's really professional. And I think that's the reason why they don't get enough credit nationally, is because they're not a team that's in it for shock value. They're not in it for, you know, interacting with other clubs. They're just a good solid voice, good solid presence. Their images, as I said, are beautiful. And of course, I got to shout out my Indians and Joel Hammond. They do a great job. Of course, people know that the Rockies and the Indians have a little thing going on, and they do a fantastic job. And we've used a lot of the stuff that they've been doing for years and years and try to incorporate it in what we do. So if I had to pick two, got to shout out the Pirates for just in general, their look and feel and everything that they do, and the Indians for their community building and the voice that they have, and for always having our back in the small market battle.
Oh, I love it. Perfect. Number eight for you. Tell me, the best food to get in Denver, and don't you dare say Rocky Mountain oysters.
I've only had one because I felt I needed to. And for people who don't know what Rocky Mountain oysters are, we sell them at the ballpark. They are deep fried bull testicles. So if you are going to Coors Field and you want the full Colorado experience, check it out. Rocky Mountain oysters. No, best food in Denver. Probably whatever my wife is cooking or I'm cooking. You know, I'm such a homebody. Anytime I'm able to be home, I like a good home cooked meal. Whether I'm cooking it or my wife or my in-laws down the street, I just like being with my family as much as possible. And there's nothing quite like a home cooked meal. So that's a cop out. That doesn't answer your question, but that's what I'm saying.
I'll make sure, just in case the wife listens to the podcast, you know, she'll be happy now.
Oh, I'm in the basement. She's upstairs, so she didn't hear it. And I'm sure she won't listen because, you know, she doesn't have an attention span that's 40 minutes long.
All right, number nine for you. Tell me this. We already talked about Nolan Arenado, so I'm going to change the question slightly. What's more likely to happen this year? Nolan Arenado wins an MVP or Trevor Story wins Rookie of the Year?
Ooh, that's tough. Well, Nolan should have won an MVP last year, but unfortunately, you know, voters took the team record into account, which, you know, is fair or unfair. That's just the reality. I think Nolan will win MVP this year. I think both of those things, Story winning a Rookie of the Year, is possible. And I think Nolan winning an MVP is possible. So if I had to pick one, I would say Nolan MVP, just because his consistency, he's been around for four seasons now, and he knows what it takes, and he's truly an elite player in this game.
I love it, and the Rockies will certainly do their best on social and digital to make sure everyone knows that.
Yes, that's all we do. Check out the Nolan Arenado word generator. That's one of my favorite projects.
One of my favorite things you guys have done. I definitely recommend people check that out. You can get lost in that for hours.
Yeah, the brainstorm was pretty epic for that. Some of the words that got left on the cutting room floor are should never see the light of day.
Oh gosh. Everyone listening, definitely Google Nolan Arenado word generator. You'll have a lot of fun with it.
Rockies.com/Nolan.
Oh, perfect. All right, we're going to get you on a little extra innings one, a little bonus. Okay. Since you know, I did talk about this before anyway, coincidentally. Tell me, do you really notice the thin air in Colorado?
Good question. Yeah, I don't. Ever since I've been coming here, when my wife and I started dating 7 years ago, almost 10 years ago now, I never noticed it coming here and working out at altitude, but I definitely noticed it, honestly, in the opposite. So when I go down to sea level from the mountains, I can notice that I can run forever. I feel like I'm so fit. I feel like my legs feel great. So it's not really a struggle coming here, but it's a benefit going the opposite way.
I find that so interesting. You might as well, you should have been training up in the thin air, I guess, when you were back in your college and pro soccer days.
I should have. Yeah, maybe I'd still be playing and maybe I wouldn't be so as bad as I was.
Oh, gosh. All right, Julian, you did a fantastic job in your 9-pitch inning. We made it 10 pitches. Or 10 innings, however you want to think about it.
Yep.
Now, your chance, you get to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. Someone on Twitter, Instagram, a blog, whatever, who they are and why they're worth following.
So a person, whether it's like a digital professional or an athlete or something?
Completely your choice.
All right, we'll go with my brother. We'll go with my brother, Zarek Valentin, at Zarek Valentin. I can't promise you anything good or interesting or funny, but I'll just give him a shout-out. My brother... he plays for the Portland Timbers Major League Soccer team, one of my best friends, so he's great. And I guess I'll shout out my brother-in-law, too, also not promising anything, but my brother-in-law, Taylor Kemp, he plays for DC United. So I think his handle is at tkemp02 or at tkemp2, one of those. So give those guys a follow. They're always complaining about not enough followers, so see if you can help them out.
Go Timbers Army. You guys must have some epic Thanksgiving football matches.
Yeah, we do. We have a lot of fun.
Oh, I wish I could see
him more.
All right, Julian, how about yourself? Where can we find you as well as the Rockies on all things social and digital?
Well, you don't want to find me. I'm boring. I don't tweet anything of worth of value to anybody. But yeah, Rockies, give us a follow. I love feedback. So if you see anything that we do that you don't like, let us know. Anything that you like. But we're at Rockies pretty much everywhere. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat is Rockies. Rockies, just like the mountains, we're a baseball team. We think that we do some good stuff, so give us a follow.
Hey, well, thank you so much again for coming on. And certainly, everyone, follow the Rockies, follow Julian. And if you are following the Rockies, be a vocal fan because we like engagement, we like noise around here.
Yeah, I will tweet you back, I'll GIF you back. That's a huge part of what we do. It's interacting with people. That's really what it's all about.
Hey, well, Julian, you were fantastic on this podcast. Cannot thank you enough. It's the middle of a long season, and you gave us a lot of great time today, a lot of great insight, and thank you so much again for coming on the podcast.
Appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. I'm going to go to bed now.
We'll be looking for Nolan Arenado to win the MVP award, too.
Yep, it's got to make it happen.
Hey,
let's go.
Thanks again, Julian.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Neil. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much again to Julian for joining us on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Just a really good guy, very articulate, able to really explain those complex ideas and also giving a method to the madness. It's not just abstract ideas that you may read in a blog somewhere or see in a Twitter chat. He actually knows how to go from point A to point B. They're calling meetings. They're setting up processes. They're having conversations to get buy-in from everyone that's necessary, and they're showing and tracking those results. So, again, thanks so much again to Julian. Just a long season for baseball, and we cannot thank him enough for giving us some of his time today. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. We'll see you next time. Please join again, and again, visit the website, dsmsports.net. For more content, and follow me, your host, Neil Horowitz, on Twitter at NJH287. We'll see you again soon on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.